Money in markets, the Eurozone troubles continue. It wasn't just good news coming out of Europe, but bad news. We saw the markets rally early in the week ahead of the holiday here in North America on the theory that the ECB had gotten expanded powers and emergency loans could be made, Italy and Spain declaring that Merkel's position had softened. The response, of course, was that one of Merkel's coalition partners threatened to topple the government if Merkel agreed to emergency loans without rigorous conditions. And then we saw Finland and the Netherlands, the Dutch prime minister, also not in favor and demanding either preferred positions for creditors or collateral. And it all made you wonder, Merkel, who was trained as a physicist, you kind of wonder if she's questioning her decision to leave science for politics. Very much in the news on both sides of the Atlantic were interest rates. We saw mortgage rates hit ever even new lows. Coming from Copenhagen, Denmark, and this is on the blog, Denmark's central bank cut interest rates by a quarter point on Thursday. What that resulted was in a secondary rate that was literally negative, which means you're paying them to hold your deposit. Now, we've seen that happen before during the Depression. For a short period of time, we had U.S. Treasuries trading at a negative interest rate in the secondary market. We've seen Swiss bonds go negative in the secondary market. But for interest rates to turn negative in a primary market by the issuer, that's a new one, at least it is to me. Send it in if you have another example. But what it means is we have too much paper, too many financial assets, and not enough solvent governments to back it up, and we just keep printing. Got one missive from a Swiss money manager last week saying that financial assets have literally doubled since 2007. His numbers didn't include derivatives. Lord only knows what it would be if we included derivatives. The other thing that has interest rates in the news is the LIBOR scandal. Barclays settled with Department of Justice, the settlement announced this week, over rigging LIBOR interest rates. LIBOR is an interest rate that is used as the basis for literally trillions of dollars of contracts throughout the financial markets globally. There seems to be great upset about this, and it's got me sort of shaking my head. The LIBOR rigging is part of, right now we're in a world where markets are rigged, access to capital is rigged, the cost of capital is rigged, not just in the interest rates, but through monetary policy and policies in the bond and stock market. That's what central bank intervention is. If you dig down and understand all the squabbling about the management of the gold market or the equity markets, that's what it's all about. If I can determine a rigged cost of capital for one group of players very different than another group of players, it has just extraordinary impact on the economy and who wins and who loses. That's what all of these conversations have been about. So why anybody thinks the LIBOR scandal is anything other than the tip of the iceberg of a much bigger problem, which has been part of the debate or has been in front and center of the debate about all of this rigging. So why exactly this is such a big brouhaha, it's not really clear. My big question is this part of the push to get the Brits to go along with the European Union's institution of a financial tax. Let's see. The European Union sanctions went into effect on July 1st. Today's July 5th, so they've been in effect literally 4 days. This is a big deal. We have Iran pushing to threaten to shut the Straits of Hormuz. And we see all sorts of sort of issues in Asia as Japan moves forward with government insurance, saying they will not import Iranian crude in July, but that means they're turning on nuclear facilities, and great upset among the population, of course, that nuclear facilities are going live again. In the meantime, Japan and China have done a renminbi deal, and we saw an announcement this week that Chile is now doing one with China. What that means is China and these countries can circumvent the dollar. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw deal after deal after deal of countries agreeing to swap and trade going around the dollar. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. If you look at what's going on, the tensions, it's a long, hot summer in the Middle East. We see Saudi Arabia moving troops up to the Jordanian border. Turkish troops on the move after Syria is said to shoot down a Turkish plane. We have the UN monitor in Syria calling for efforts to end growing violence inside the country. And so the politics in and around who controls the Middle East and around oil are getting ever more tense with the EU sanctions going on. Again, a long, hot summer in the Middle East, but a long, hot summer in the U.S. as well. We saw the Supreme Court uphold Obamacare, defining it as a tax. It was the first good political news for the president. Peggy Noonan has an excellent editorial on the decision from the Wall Street Journal and what it meant politically. That's up on the blog. You can check it out. Again, long, hot summer. We had a drought throughout the states. About 90% of the country is experiencing drought and real water problems. And, of course, we see wildfires in some places. As an example, story up on the blog, Michigan is expected to lose 90% of its apple crop. All the drought is pushing the ag commodity prices up, but it's still bad news for farmers, especially with their energy and other expenses up. We see an announcement from San Bernardino in California that they are exploring using government expropriation powers with approval of judges to cease and write down mortgages for homeowners. This is one I can't wait to see the court filings on. But essentially what they're saying is they're going to seize, and in fact they're working with investors to force the renegotiation of mortgage with private mortgage-backed security holders. That's one I'm going to be keeping a watch on. I put a video of Matt Taibbi and Eve Smith on Bill Moyers up, talking about the importance of pushing banks into a utility kind of business model, since this is where I think the plan is to go. It's not surprising, but I'm stunned by the fact that there's no comment on the amount of money that's been stolen through the banks or any suggestion that we ought to get it back. The reality is if the only result is we convert the banks into utilities now that all the money has been stolen, the message is, once again, that crime pays and the people with now $27 trillion will come back and have their way politically. We had more announcements of natural gas deposit finds in North America, this time Apache Corporation announcing the extent of its new reserves in British Columbia. The finds over the last decade, combined with the new fracking technology, is now creating gas reserves sufficient to provide more than a century of energy self-sufficiency in North America, and it continues to be one of the bright spots in the economy. And it is not to be underestimated in the strength that it could give to the U.S. economy over the next decade and U.S. manufacturing. Again, if you haven't listened to the great interview we did with Jim Norman, I would really recommend it. More bad news for coal, though, as natural gas prices stay highly competitive, but also the Federal Court of Appeals ruled that EPS has the right to regulate greenhouse gases. That's going to impact power plants, and again, bad news for coal. It's up on the blog. It's off the homepage now, but if you go back, you can find it. And that decision came out right before the Supreme Court decision for Obamacare, so that was two very, very important court decisions for the administration. We saw Myths and Truths. It's a peer-reviewed study out of King's College in the UK. It challenges claims that GMO foods are safe. Well, let me just read you some quotes from it. Research studies show that genetically modified crops have harmful effects on laboratory animals in feeding trials and on the environment during cultivation. They have increased the use of pesticides and have failed to increase yields. Very important point. Our report concludes that there are safer and more effective alternatives to meeting the world's food needs. Another quote, crop genetic engineering as practiced today is a crude, imprecise, and outmoded technology. It can create unexpected toxins or allergens in foods and affect their nutritional value. Recent advances point to better ways of using our knowledge of genomics to improve food crops that do not involve genetically modified. Over 75,000 of all genetically modified crops are engineered to tolerate being sprayed by herbicide. This has led to the spread of herbicide-resistant superweeds and has resulted in massively increased exposure of farmers and communities to these toxic chemicals. Epidemiological studies suggest a link between herbicide use and birth defects and cancer. That study is up on the blog, and it's exactly how it made it out, I don't know, but there's some brave and fearless people there. Wild cards. Last week we saw some very significant cyber attacks in U.S., Europe, Latin America, and on a variety of financial systems. The object was to siphon money from high balance bank and credit union accounts. And it was noted that this time they were not only hitting the bigger banks, but some of the smaller banks too. We did a wonderful Solari report on identity theft, and if you haven't been touched by identity theft, it's something that you want to know about as the economy struggles. These are the times when you have more and more of this kind of fraud, and we all need to be on the lookout. And so if you haven't listened to that one, I strongly recommend it, please make sure you do a great job of keeping your financial records and keeping your passwords and other secure data. If you do banking online, keep your passwords off of your computer and be very, very diligent in how you handle those.